It's a lovely, calm, balmy evening here in our garden in County Wicklow. The temperature is predicted to hit about 16 degrees tonight, and it's lovely and overcast. It's a perfect night for setting up a moth trap, and that is exactly what I'm doing up in the wilder section here of our garden. It's going to be a good night, I have that feeling.
My name is Eric Dempsey. I'm an ornithologist, an author, and a wildlife photographer. Not necessarily in that order, I hasten to add. As you can hear, I'm setting a moth trap. Rest assured, no animals were harmed, and all insects were released safely after identification.
A moth trap is quite a simple thing. It's basically a box, or a large circular box that I have at the moment, called a Robinson trap, and I'm putting egg cartons into the base of the box. The idea of egg cartons is very simple. I'm going to be putting a light over the box which attracts the moths. They will go in to the trap because we have a funnel system, almost like a lobster pot effect, where they can go in but they find it difficult to go out. So first thing is just put in some egg cartons here, and they don't have to be in any way organized, you know, I just sort of throw them randomly in, and I'll put a fair number in. I then put a Perspex cover on the moth trap, and then I put a funnel type gadget. Now, this is the key, because into that I screw a very bright light. It's called a mercury vapor light. So this is the vital thing, because moths are attracted to light, which is the reason why a cold, clear, moonlit night is not the best for catching moths. And I should say that I'm licensed to trap moths under a wonderful scheme run by the fabulous organisation Moths Ireland, and they do a great job. And we document all the moths that are trapped, and then all that then goes into the National Biodiversity Centre, where all of the information is documented. Now, I've just put in the light, and now I'm going to put on a little rain shelter. It's useful because what will happen is the moths will be attracted into the light. They will hit a funnel, and they will go down into the trap and settle themselves into the egg cartons, where they are safe and sound, away from predators, and with the little rain guard on, also away from the rain. And then in the morning, I will extract all of the egg cartons, document and count the species, document the number we have, and that will all then feed into our understanding of our wonderful biodiversity that we have in Ireland. So trap is all set up, egg cartons are all in and secure. All I have to do now is turn it on and see what happens.
Regular Moonie Goes Wild listeners will know me as the Birdman, a title I'm very proud of. That said, whilst birds have been my main area of interest since childhood, I don't confine myself to just ornithology. On the contrary, I'm deeply interested in all aspects of the natural world. Now, this might come as a shock to some of my fellow birders, but in recent years, I have gone to the dark side and have become a mother. A keen amateur, dipping his toe into the field of lepidopterology, a branch of entomology concerned with the scientific study of butterflies and moths. There's something about these creatures that lends them more appeal than most insects. We know that moths and butterflies cannot hurt us, which is definitely a bonus, and many are quite large and easy to observe. For millennia, we humans have been fascinated by these seemingly fragile, yet amazingly sturdy and robust winged animals. It's no wonder that butterflies and moths are so often the gateway for many people to a deeper appreciation of the insect world. But not all Lepidoptera are created equal, at least as far as many people are concerned. I've frequently been struck by how much more attention and affection butterflies receive compared to moths. Moths, like other creatures of the night, have always been feared. They are the mysterious first cousins of butterflies, yet few view them in the same way. Compared to butterflies, there is no denying that moths have something of a PR problem. Often dismissed as being boring, they are anything but, as recent research has shown. Scientists from the University of Bristol have discovered that ermine moths have evolved a very special acoustic defence mechanism against their echolocating predators, bats. These ultrasonic chirps are a warning sound to bats that they are poisonous and should be avoided at all costs. Our perception of moths needs to change. Many, though by no means all, of our Irish butterflies tend to be more colourful and ostentatious than most of our moths, it's true. But there are many very beautiful moths to be seen too. Our butterflies are out and about during daylight hours and so are easier to encounter, while most of our moths are nocturnal creatures. But again, there are many exceptions, and some of our most beautiful and interesting moths, such as the six-spot burnet, the cinnabar, and the extraordinary hummingbird hawk moth, are day-flying and boast stunning coloration that would put many a butterfly to shame. But what are the differences between moths and butterflies?
Okay, we'll start with what's the same about them first. They're both in the order Lepidoptera, which is a Greek word meaning scale wings. So they both have four wings that are bigger than their body in proportion. But what's different about them? You might think that butterflies are in the day and moths are in the night. All butterflies come out in the day, but some moths come out in the day as well as the night.
So there's no nocturnal butterflies?
No. You okay. might get some migrating at night.
Yes.
But not the ones that we see normally in Ireland.
Okay.
Martine Brennan is a lepidopterist based in County Laois.
So we have about 1,500 moths in Ireland and 35 species of butterfly.
Big difference.
Yep. So there's a lot of moths to learn about. A lot of them are nocturnal and a lot of them are dull and brown, but a lot of them are also highly coloured. So you can't say that butterflies are the coloured ones and moths are the brown ones. There's about, I think it's 75 families in the Lepidoptera. About six of those are butterflies. So butterflies are like a sector of moths that have evolved differently. You might say that butterflies are the ones that hold their wings up high and moths flatten them down as a tent over their body. But then there are exceptions to that. So some moths have their wings upright as well. So there's
right
thorn moths.
Thorns,
that's right.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
You've seen
yes.
those ones.
Yes.
Colours. So butterflies, lots of colourful ones, blue ones, one purple one, and lots of red and orange, yellow, bright yellow ones. But there are also brown ones. There's the speckled wood and the dingy skipper. So we can't say that all butterflies are colourful. There are brown ones. And moths, as I say, there's lots of brown ones, all with different patterns on their wings. But there's also yellow ones, green ones, orange ones, red ones, ones with blue in. And you might be familiar with the daytime moths with a bright red hindwing. So that's the cinnabar moths that have the stripy caterpillars. And they have black and red on their top wings and bright red underwings. And also there's burnet moths that have red and black. So very, very colourful, and they fly during the day. So I've told you why all the moths and butterflies are quite similar, but there's a few differences. So the main one to look out for is their antennae. So the feelers on top
yes.
of their heads, which are used for detecting scents. So the butterflies would use them for smelling flowers in particular, and also detecting other butterflies. Moths use them for finding their partners by detecting pheromones. So the male moths, a lot of them are very feathery, and the females less so, and they can be tapered, and they can be quite fine. But if you look at the butterfly's antennae, they always have this clubbed bit or this bulge on the end. So that's
okay.
the key difference between them. Another thing to look for is if you see butterflies, you might see them out in the sun with their wings wide open. And what are they doing? They're sunning themselves, trying to catch energy from the sun to power up their wing muscles so then they can fly off to the next flower or find their partner. Moths can't use the sun if they're out at night time. So what they do is they vibrate their wings. It's called shivering. And that generates heat. It can even raise them by 15 degrees, I read. So that warms up their wing muscles and that allows them to fly.
Okay, so that's called shivering because it's an amazing feeling when you hold a moth on your finger and you can feel the vibrations going through your hand, vroom, suddenly it's gone. So that's what they're doing. They're warming themselves up.
Yeah, okay. And you'll notice that with the big moths like the poplar hawk moth.
Yes, yes. So they're the two fundamental differences. That is unbelievable. So the main thing is how they warm themselves up and get airborne. The butterflies tend to sit in the sun and warm themselves that way, whereas moths do that shivering. And the antennae, and some of them are very feathered. And it's the males that have the more feathered antennae because they are the ones going after the females, which are emitting pheromones. Is that right?
Perfect, yes.
That is amazing. I have learned an awful lot in those couple of minutes, Martine. Thank you so much indeed. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
So, moths and butterflies are very closely related to each other. While my knowledge of butterflies has always been quite good, I couldn't say the same for my understanding of moths. I had seen the likes of hummingbird hawk moths when out birding, and what a thrill that was, but my real interest was sparked in 2020 when I discovered a beautiful yellow moth called a canary-shouldered thorn. Now, it took me some time to identify it, but in so doing, I became hooked. It was then that I decided that if I was really going to take this seriously, I would have to buy myself a guidebook. So, I got a copy of the Concise Guide to the Moths of Great Britain and Ireland. Browsing through the pages of the Concise Guide was a revelation. I was astonished by the mind-boggling variety of species that could be seen, even in our own garden in County Wicklow. I was also struck by some of the beautiful names of the moths within that book. There was a garden tiger, a small elephant hawk moth, a peach blossom, and a true lover's knot, as well as a very drab brown one called the uncertain. As I turned the pages, I was struck by one entry on page 86 that simply read, "White prominent, Ireland, extinct." Extinct? Ireland has lost a species of moth? Why was I surprised? I was ignorant, but I was determined to find out more. So, I began researching the white prominent, and to my absolute amazement, I learned that, having been declared extinct over 70 years beforehand, the white prominent, like Lazarus, has risen from the dead and had been refound in 2008 in one small area of South Kerry. I'm on a mission to find a living, breathing white prominent.
When En Post asked me to paint something for the endangered wildlife, I knew I wanted to do an invertebrate, and I spoke to a friend of mine, John Fogarty, who knows everything about anything, and he said, do the white prominent. Usually it's quite difficult to find subjects to paint, or you're picking and choosing which subjects would be more suitable for the stamp. And he sent me over a photograph. The minute I saw the photograph, I just knew it would be the most perfect stamp.
Siobhan Doherty is a wildlife and botanical artist. In 2021, she was commissioned by En Post to contribute to a series of stamps celebrating Ireland's rare species.
The original photograph was the white prominent moth sitting on bracken. Immediately I was struck that it looked like the Irish flag. You know, you had this really beautiful green and this beautiful white moth sitting on the bracken, and it had these little orange hearts on its wing. So, and the moth was actually sitting there, and it was very bright. So ideal, obviously, for an Irish stamp. It almost looked like it was wearing a fur coat. It was this really lush, white, thorax, you know, beautiful, beautiful white thing. And then these, like a cloak. It wasn't just wings. They were like a cloak with these lovely little markings of, you know, orange and tiny little dark spots on it. And against the green background, obviously, that was the Irish thing. And luckily, en passant agreed with me straight away when I said, how about this? After that, I contacted Dave Allen, who is the guy who discovered it. I actually watched the video of him discovering, and immediately, as soon as I knew that, you know, I saw this video and there were these grown men weeping with joy having discovered it. It was, you know, you have a beautiful moth, it looks like the Irish flag, and you have grown men weeping in joy at the discovery of this moth. So yeah, for me it was a winner straight away.
Well, all I can say is, because I'm looking at it on your wall up there, sometimes scientific paintings can be very stiff and can be very rigid, and but that moth is about to fly off the page. You've produced a thing of beauty.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm really glad that you say that.
It's stunning, and I'm starting off on this journey in pursuit of this moth. And my aim is to possibly get to Kerry at some stage and to actually encounter this moth for myself. And if it is anything like your painting, it will be worth the effort.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm very fortunate because people are very generous. I hang around with people who are a lot cleverer than me and very passionate about their subjects. And I'm like a sponge. I absorb their passion and their enthusiasm and their knowledge and then try to put it into the artwork.
Well, all I can say is, because I've seen lots of your paintings here and I've looked through your notebooks, you create wonderful representations of the natural world, and it's a real pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Inspired by Siobhan's painting, I was now, more than ever, determined to continue my quest to see one. But first, I needed to discover more about the life cycle of the white prominent and its preferred habitats. I travelled to Cork to meet the father of Irish lepidoptery, the legendary Ken Bond.
County Kerry, especially the Killarney area, is known for a number of rare species. It's probably something to do with the age of the woodland. Woodland has survived in the remoter parts near west of and near Killarney, on the mountain sides of mountains in remote valleys. Oak woodland, but also birch woodland is very important. And it has good stands of aspen and rowan, for example, which are not found in such numbers elsewhere in Ireland. So the age of the stands of birch is probably important. Incidentally, the white prominent is said to feed only on birch in some sources, but other sources do mention that it can feed on other trees, specifically on rowan elsewhere in its range. As far as we know, it's confined to birch in Ireland. And
what's the peak flying time? When, if I'm going down to Kerry, when should I be travelling?
Judging by the records, it seems to be late May and June.
Okay.
And there are one or two records later in July. Now, that suggests there might be a partial second brood, or it might be just very late specimens.
So normally they would just have one brood, is that it?
Normally one brood, and the brood, like many woodland species, is early summer.
Okay.
Specifically around late May and early June.
As I mentioned, the white prominent was listed as extinct for 70 years before being rediscovered. How could that be? I headed north to Belfast to meet up with an old friend and one of Ireland's leading moth experts, Dave Allen. Dave was one of the leading members of the expedition team in 2008 to re-find the white prominent.
Autumn 1988. And it was a friend of mine, a birding friend of mine in North Wales, who infected me with the moth bug. I just happened to be over there for a few days staying with him, and he was running a trap in the garden. And that was...
No going back after that.
There's no going back after that.
When you started, you know, moths, this one moth that was in the books must have jumped out at you. Because I know when I got my first book on moths, I was fascinated with white prominent being extinct.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because it's such a spectacular looking moth, and when you look at the plate of the prominent moths in Skinner, you know, the photographs of the specimens, or in the more recent book like Waring, it just jumps out at you because it is so stunning to look at. And then when you read the text, you know, in the older books, obviously it says it's extinct, not been seen since 1938 in Ireland, that is, longer extinct in Britain. Basically, it just became mythical, and yet, obviously living in Ireland, you know, and having the opportunity to think about the Irish moth fauna, it's inevitable it becomes a bit of a quest. And I'm not the only person to become a quest. Well, lots of people went looking for it. It's not like from 1938 to 2008, nobody looked for it.
Yeah.
Lots of people looked for it. Bernard Skinner, one of the famous more recent moth guys who died a few years ago, who wrote, the first accessible moth book, really, he looked for it many times, but never found it. And others had looked before him. And you always were trapping the Killarney area in the hope that you might bump into a white prominent, but nobody did.
But the history, like, it was first discovered in Ireland in 1858, I think.
Yeah, 1858, a single taken by Peter Bouchard. And then he was, well, interestingly, he seemed to be charmed because for the first few years of occurrence, only Peter Bouchard could find it. And you've got to remember, at that time, lots of Brits were coming over to Ireland, staying in Muckross House or wherever, and they were coming over here as entomologists, lepidopterists, looking for things that didn't occur in Britain or things that were rare in Britain, and wanting to get the name in print, want to find something new, special. But Bouchard could come back and keep finding it, and he kept finding it until 1858 to 1864, and nobody else did.
Did that cause suspicion?
Not initially, no, as far as I know, anyway, because he just was able to walk out of Muckross House, where he stayed, and then come back with a white prominent before breakfast. And that's recorded in various journals and gazettes and things. The longer that went on, that nobody else could find it, and other well-known naturalists, lepidopterists, were coming to the area and all failing to find it, it did begin eventually to generate a bit of suspicion because these things were valuable. I mean, there is an Irish specimen, or an alleged Irish specimen, was sold in the 1860s at auction in London for 21 guineas.
21 guineas in 1860.
It's a huge amount of money. Which starts to give you a little inkling into the darker side of the whole world of lepidopterists, in that people like Bouchard was a collector. That was his way of financing his life, was collecting specimens, not just in Ireland, but in Europe and South America. And he provided for his extremely large family by going off collecting specimens and then selling them. So money becomes a main driver, not just getting your name in print, but for people like Bouchard, it was also a way of living.
You know, these weren't found. There was only a handful of records
from
Britain, isn't that right?
The first one was 1861 from Staffordshire.
Yeah.
And then again in 1865, six adults and larvae.
Yeah.
And then never again. And Burntwood, Staffordshire, has suitable habitat.
Yeah.
Big old birch trees. But it's never been refound there. Interestingly, the Welsh clearing was also found around the same time and into the early part of the 20th century at Burntwood, Staffordshire, and then never seen again until the lures were developed, and suddenly
the Welsh clearing's
there. So, but white prominent would appear not to be there. And then there was a weird single record from Devon in 1880.
Okay, but from an Irish perspective then, after Bouchard...
Well, Bouchard died in 1865,
took
his secrets with him. And Birchall, who published, you know, a well-known naturalist, published a fully supportive document, you know, in print about Bouchard's records, because there were rumours beginning to circulate. And then, basically, you're talking about Hardy in 1867, found a single male who was the first non-Bouchard person to find them in Killarney.
Okay.
And then In 1868, Hardy also found a larvae, but then Burchell went into print shortly afterwards, basically changing his whole story and saying that he didn't believe any of the records.
Okay.
And that he thought they were all spurious. In other words, continental specimens.
That were claimed to have been
And we know that Bouchard, when he was in Macross, on occasions did have a collection of pupae with him.
Okay. So there's a
So people saw the pupae. So, you know, did he...
The murky side.
There's a murky side there.
And like, where they found then, like, after that period, like up to the 1890s, or
I mean, in the 1890s, Miss Vernon had a couple near Kenmare, not in the Killarney area.
Okay.
So this is where it gets more interesting. And then in 1912, which is the next, so a big gap again, a well-known lepidopterist from Northern Ireland, from County Down, Canon Foster, was staying with clergy friends in the Glen Carr area. And he bumped into white prominence on two occasions.
Okay.
One on the windowsill of the house he was staying in, which is undoubtedly the house that became the hotel near the Glen Carr Woods.
Of course.
And then he also was sheltering from rain under the alder trees along the river and found one sitting in the alder trees. And Canon Foster's reputation in Northern Ireland was 100% sound. So he was always an interesting character.
So that was an indication that they were still there.
Yeah, that was 1912.
So there were big gaps, like, between...
Yeah, and then 1917, there was a young collector who had the wonderful name of Leopold Bonaparte Wise, who was cycling between Killarney and Kenmare, and found one flying around a holly bush in the daytime.
Okay.
And he was described in one journal as being an energetic young collector. But he got the specimen. And then after that, nothing until the 1930s, when Donovan, who was again someone who wrote a lot on the moths of Ireland, he found an adult and three larvae in 1932-33 in the Kenmare area, and then found larvae in the Killarney area the following year. But he never told anybody precisely where.
Okay.
So there was a lot of people trying to work out where was Donovan. And unfortunately, Donovan's diaries ended up in a private collection, as far as I know. So nobody was ever able to ascertain exactly where he was. But some people, like Bernard Skinner, traced back to where he thought he was, but still went to those areas and still didn't find anything. So, but the problem as well, you've got to remember, is that Killarney had undergone huge changes, because the amount of rhododendron that had grown through may have affected the ground flora, and we know that white prominent needs to pupate in amongst folded leaves. The pupa is inside the folded leaves on the ground. So if the whole ground flora changes,
so they need ground cover and leaves.
Yeah, and if
on
it's on bare ground underneath rhododendrons, it's going to be rat food.
Yes,
potentially.
Of course.
So that's just an assumption or a guess.
But that was the last.
Well, in 1936-38, larvae were found, and then a male found by Mrs. Lucas.
Yeah.
And they're the last records, 1938. Again, vaguely in the Killarney. Because what you've got to remember, in those days, people didn't think about precise locations being important. People put things in collections, and on the data label for the specimen, it would be where the collection was kept.
Yes, of course.
Not necessarily where the moth
where
was
the
taken.
Moth was taken, yeah.
So it all becomes a bit vague. And then we go into this period of time when...
70 years?
70 years of nothing. And in 2005, I started looking seriously at white prominent and doing... I got a huge amount of help from people like Brian Nelson, who works for NPWS, giving me original papers.
Yes.
And I realised, because Brian had said this to me, as had others, that if you go to the original papers, it's sometimes a lot more useful than looking at summaries in books. Because if something gets misinterpreted, then it's repeated. And the misinterpretation...
Of course,
So if you go back to original source, then you can get more information. So with Haynes's paper, The Extraordinary Tale of the White Prominent, he summarised a lot of the references. And it was pretty clear in Haynes's paper that he wasn't totally convinced it was an Irish insect.
Yes, okay.
But he kept it open, you know, and he looked at Burchell's, complete about face. That in itself is interesting because Burchell was very friendly with Harding, who ran what became the London Natural History Society.
Okay.
Haggerston Club, I think it was called at the time. And Harding knew Bouchard. And Bouchard and Harding would have traded specimens and cabinets. And Bouchard owed Harding a debt. And Harding took him to the small claims court in London. And,
okay, so there's personal animosity.
There's personal animosity developing. And then Harding went into print and said that Bouchard was a cad and a bounder, literally those terms in the Gazette, and that he was a charlatan.
Okay.
And that he would do anything for money. But of course he had a personal grievance, wanting to get his debt paid. There was actually a paper published by Bouchard's grandson many years later, actually explaining how his great-grandfather had been besmirched.
Good God.
And, he contacted me out of the blue after we found the White Prominent and saw us re-finding it as total justification for Bouchard's...
That's amazing.
It was a real shock.
So it's there in the Bouchard family.
Yeah.
This slur had been kept.
Yeah.
But you put on your Sherlock Holmes hat in 2005. Yeah.
And I disregarded, I mean, everybody had trapped Killarney.
Yeah.
We'd trapped Killarney. We'd trapped various parts of Killarney. So why would you go back to Killarney to look for it again when you've been there and loads of other people have been there in different parts? It's a big place, but still lots of places have been covered. So I looked at the places that no one had been to. So I looked at the Kenmare area and tried to work out where the townland of Ard Tully was, which was what was referred to in one of the documents, which I found out where it was. And surprise, surprise, there in the river valley in Ard Tully is a big old woodland with lots of old birch trees. So that was one area that we decided was well worth visiting. Our team of five, myself, Maurice Hughes, Clive Mellon, Paul Waring, we brought over from GB because I know Paul. And Paul's great crack, and he's also very good at finding stuff, so bringing him with us was a sensible idea. And we also brought my mate Mark Telfer, who's a top-end entomologist, because we knew he'd generate lots of information on other species, so that...
Superb, so it was a good team.
So it was a good team, five-man team. At that time as well, we couldn't afford to do it necessarily, but then as 2008 appeared on the horizon, and I'd done a lot more digging, Heritage Council grants became available. So we applied for a Heritage Council grant to go and look at, not for White Prominent, but just to get moth records from under-recorded areas in Kerry and, as it happened, Sligo.
Yes.
Which were two big holes at the time where there were very few records generated. And we had an outside chance of White Prominent. That was the way I constructed it. So Kenmare area was one area, and the other area was I was following the line of Canon Foster, because we knew his reputation was solid.
Yes.
And no matter what Burchell or Haynes might think, we were thinking, well, Foster's a good guy. And nobody seems to have gone back to this area of Glen Carr.
Yes.
But of course, we didn't know exactly where in Glen Carr. But looking at the maps, it was obviously the area to the south and east of Carra Lake. So when we went down, our team of five, we hit the Ard Tully area first, and ironically we stayed in a B&B called the Birches, which we thought was a great portent of things to come, but of course we didn't. We got some really nice moths in the woodland there, but we didn't find White Prominent. So we moved to Carra Lake for the next two nights, and the first problem was we hadn't been able to do much groundwork, so we were looking for areas to trap, and it was pretty obvious the area was populated by very rich people in very big houses with very big security fences, and finding somewhere to run the traps was not easy. We could see from on high, looking down, a big area of nice old birch trees on a little island off where we knew there was a big hotel. So we walked down through the hotel grounds, which were all manicured, but out to where this island was, which was connected by a wee bridge called Roberts Island, and there was these monstrous old birch trees all around it. And we thought, right, well, we'll run the traps down here. And we set the traps up, went back to where we were staying, came back to the hotel, dawn the next morning, and the rest is history.
What was that moment like?
Well, you've probably seen the video as
I've
well.
I've seen the video, yeah. But it's a wonderful video.
Yeah.
And like, just for people who have not seen the video, and I think it is online.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's the moment when you guys arrive to the trap.
Yeah. Well, Mark turned over a bracken frond and came out with the immortal words of, "Isn't this a white prominent?" At which point there was chaos ensued, cameras flashing, turned on, hysterical laughter, and me in tears.
Just look at this.
This is a white prominent.
The video in question is the exact moment that Dave and the team rediscovered the white prominent.
Dave's in tears.
Yeah, I'm actually in tears. I'm actually broken down.
In the video, Paul Waring concludes that Peter Bouchard, the man who originally found the white prominent in County Kerry in the 1850s, was not the bound and cad as some thought. He was, in fact, the right man in the right place at the right time.
Oh, the emotion of it all, Dave.
Well, what can you say? We came, we saw, we conquered. A true red letter day here. This is the first record of the white prominent in the British Isles since about 1938.
It does exist, then.
It does exist. It's not a figment of everybody's imagination. And Bouchard was not the total cad, but bounder and semi-looper.
This mythical beast of a little white moth with orange and black on the wings is suddenly before your eyes, and we're in your study here, and the picture
of the very moth
that you found is hanging on the wall.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a very emotional moment, and I mean, it was quite staggering that it was there. And of course, we did find a few more over the next night. So really, once we knew it was there, what we did was we contacted MPWS and told them that we'd found it, and the Heritage Council had granted us what we'd found.
I am now tempted to go and have a look at some specimens if I can, and undoubtedly I'll be going down to Glencar in the very near future to try and see white prominent for myself.
You should be pretty successful. They're not rare when you're in the right spot, which is what a maze does. Then it's not like you're going to catch one and never see another one. Once you're in the right area, they are quite common.
Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat with me about your amazing rediscovery. It's a real privilege to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
With all the controversy surrounding the first Irish records of white prominent, I was delighted to be invited by Dr. Aidan O'Hanlon, Curator of Entomology at the Natural History Museum in Dublin, to view some of the archived specimens dating back to the 1850s, including the original white prominent found by the aforementioned Peter Bouchard.
And we've our white prominents in here.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is the first time I've actually laid eyes on even a specimen of white prominent.
There's only three specimens in this drawer. Which is unusual, actually, for such a rare specimen that entomologists back in the day, it was the greatest prize of entomology in the British Isles, really, was all of these people obsessing over trying to find this rare moth.
Why was it the greatest prize? What's so special about it?
I think there's an element of that it's beautiful, first of all.
It's gorgeous.
It's white
absolutely.
Moth, and it's got these very bright orange marks on the wings. It's kind of unlike any of the other white moths that we have in Ireland. But I think as well is because when it was first found here, during the age of the high age of Victorian natural history and specimen collecting, and people were obsessed with all of that. And this was found first by an English entomologist called Peter Bouchard. And it's a species that was found in Ireland that hadn't been found in England or anywhere in Britain. So it was a bit more exotic, and it was kind of an Irish speciality from down in the birch woods in Killarney, that were thought to be this kind of a bit like the land before time. There was this untouched, very natural area, and it was kind of sky's the limit of what else can you find down there.
They weren't found anywhere else in Ireland,
And
only a handful of specimens are known from the UK. Is that right?
Yeah, and they're much later than the Irish ones as well. The ones that have shown, I think only two specimens that have shown up in the UK since.
Yeah.
So apart from that, it's quite widely distributed, this species, across the Palearctic and across continental Europe. missing Britain entirely, except for about one or two records, and then into just the southwest of Ireland, mostly into the Killarney region. All of these specimens, for instance, were found beaten from birch trees. So the adults were resting on birch trees, and they would have gone in with a beating tray, which is basically just, it's like a big sheet of cloth, white cloth, yes. And they'd get a stick or something and bash the branches, and these adults would fall off. There's a paper describing the delight of Boutred when he found this first thing, when it came in. It was the 1st of July, and it came in 1858.
Yeah.
And he bashed a birch tree, and the adult came falling down.
And is this the first time white prominent has ever been seen or identified? Or
not in the world. So what happened there was the first person to discover it in Ireland, or indeed in Ireland or Britain, was Boutred, was this early specimen from Killarney. And he sensed it was new, didn't know what it was, obviously, because he hadn't seen it before, because he was from England and there weren't specimens there. So he brought it over to the Natural History Museum in London to be identified. And they had specimens of this moth species from Europe. So they were able to compare it against, you know, named specimens from elsewhere in Europe and identify it as this, as the white prominent moth. So it wasn't a new species to science, but it was certainly new from our part of the world. It hadn't been found here before.
In early June, I headed to the beautiful valleys of Glen Carr in South Kerry, where, on a perfect mothing night, I met up with local moth expert Lorcan MacDonald, a man who lives in the very heart of the White Prominence Range.
Lorcan.
Eric, how are you doing?
Lovely to meet you. How are you doing?
Good now, and yourself?
What a wonderful area you live in.
Lovely evening, isn't it?
God, it's a perfect evening. So, White Prominence night, what do you think?
Hopefully.
You're going to bring us down a long track here.
We're going to head into the woods here, and we'll put out a couple of traps in a few townlands and a few grid squares around the parish, and we'll see what we find tonight.
Fantastic. Well, I have to say, I've never been to Glen Carr before. It is beautiful, and it's full of the perfect habitat, which is, of course, old birch woodland.
It is, and we've plenty of that around here, and our birch woodland is supported with oak and holly as well, so we should see what we find.
That's fantastic. Well, look, we're all set. It's about 9:45 the evening, and it's a beautiful evening. It's still bright here. So
lovely pink sky.
Yeah,
there as well.
It won't be dark for a while, so we get some traps set up.
We get ourselves organised.
And fingers crossed, so
here's
off
hoping.
We go.
Indeed.
We made our way down a long, winding track into the unique habitats of old birch woodlands, the perfect place for setting our traps.
Well, that is some equipment you have, Lorcan. You have a large, is that a Robinson trap?
It is, it's a Robinson trap, yeah.
And these traps, really, they're almost like lobster pots, aren't they? They sort of create that lobster pot effect.
They do, and they seal everything in so well as well. And the lamp being very, very bright, not a lot can get in and get out.
Very good. Cars passing by the lane. But the amount of gear you have, and you have a little trolley made, which is absolutely brilliant.
And it attaches to the back of my bike, the back behind the seat post on the bike as well.
Oh, that's superb. But
maybe I need an electric bike to move it around now. It's getting heavy.
And you also have a large battery, so it can be independent. It doesn't need to be plugged in, is that right?
Yeah, so today I have a petrol generator.
Yeah.
But I have a big lithium battery that can power it as well.
Well, if we don't get white prominent with all that gear, don't have a chance.
I don't know. Well, here's hoping.
Any moth we see tonight will be a good one.
Well, do you know what? It's better than having no moths at all.
Exactly.
Here, Eric.
That looks good.
It just looks good. Lots of birch, lots of oak.
That is some height down there.
It's downhill.
Downhill, but it's uphill in the morning.
Uphill in the morning, yeah.
So, this is you just leave the trap here out in the middle of the path.
So what we'll do is we'll leave the generator up here and we'll just run a cable down, and about 20 metres down there we'll just put the trap out. There's great view because the land falls away on each side as well. So it's up on a bit of a height.
Okay, well,
let's do it.
Indeed.
Generator on, traps set. It was now a waiting game. And much to our surprise, it wasn't long before we struck gold.
Right, it's nearly 11 o'clock.
Okay.
So let's just have a quick look to see if anything has arrived. There's a few bits and pieces there, isn't there?
Is that common wave?
Yeah.
Common white wave? Is that a pug? I'm not great with pugs. I tend to
No, they're very difficult, aren't they?
Yeah. Mapwing swift over here.
Oh, they're beautiful, yes. Yeah,
so. Buff ermine.
Yeah, okay, wow.
There's a white prominent there.
A white prominent? Where were you looking?
Just here. See him there on the...
Oh, wow! Yes!
There's a second one.
We have two. Oh, look at the orange on the wing. Oh, wow. I didn't expect we were going to get them really that quickly.
And if you can see through the bulb...
Yeah.
There's another one on
there's
the rim.
There's a third one on the rim.
Yeah.
We actually have three white prominents.
And that's just...
And it's only
trap.
11 o'clock.
And that's in the first trap we've checked in this run.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Cool is not the word I'd use. But I have to be polite.
Yeah, there's a couple of mapwing swifts there now as well. So.
Oh, wow.
A bit of life around. Plenty of midges still, though.
I've been eaten alive by midges.
Bella's on the move, so I'm just going to tap him into the box a bit.
Yeah, oh, there he is. Oh, look at the wings.
See
with the wings
the
open,
now.
Yeah. With the orange and the...
And the little black marks.
Little black marks. Oh, that is just a beautiful, beautiful moth, isn't it?
It's amazing to think that it's only found in this area.
And, you know, like, I've been on this journey of trying to see... white prominent and talking to all these people about its history and how it had gone extinct and there it is.
For me, I just need to appreciate just how lucky I am where I live. I live in the right place.
That is just phenomenal. Oh, wow. Well, I'm sort of looking forward to the morning when we have several traps out. We have, what, five traps out this evening at various locations?
Wouldn't it be cool if there was one in
one each? One in each one. And it'd be lovely to see it out in daylight. But what? Oh, wow. Lorcan, I can't thank you enough for showing me.
I only put the box in the right place.
Oh, but you knew where the right place
well,
was. That's the difference. That's the difference. I could put a moth trap out among various locations and I mightn't. Mightn't find the right place. There, it's flying again.
He'll find a box now and he'll settle down inside there for a while.
Yeah, he's just going into a cardboard box there, into one of the egg cups. Well, I'm looking forward to now going back to the traps. It's 11 o'clock and we're going to stay here another little while. But we have an early start, so we'll be looking at the traps at around 5 a.m.
Well, maybe a little before it, maybe.
Absolutely fantastic. That is a success. And we're only setting the traps up in the last hour or two.
So we're an hour into our night and there we go.
That is just amazing. I can't wait for the morning.
It's funny. We have more white prominents than anything else in the
box. Yes, there's three white prominents in the box and very little else so far.
Two mapwing swifts.
Thank you so much.
No worries. You're more than welcome.
With three white prominents in hand, we decided to call it a night. Early next morning, we returned for one final check.
So, Lorcan, just after 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Are we mad or what? About 3 hours sleep. Has it been worth it?
Well, look, we came looking for white prominent. We've three in this trap here this morning. First trap we meet in the morning.
And it's wonderful to see them in sort of daylight as opposed to looking at them through torches. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful moths. That orangey red markings, you know, edged by black. It's just, they are stunning little things.
Yeah. But there's other white moths here as well this morning.
Yes, we have white ermine.
We've clouded silver.
Yeah.
There's lots of clouded borders around as well. And we had a common white wave. So there's lots of white moths.
Lots of white moths. Yeah. And lots of moths in this trap. So it's going to keep us going for a little while just to try and document what we have here. And this is only trap one.
Trap one.
But trap one has been a wonderful success. So Lorcan, again, can't thank you enough for bringing me on this final leg of my journey. And white prominent... What a moth, and what a story, and what an incredible rediscovery of a species that was once considered extinct. And here we are in Glencar, in a lovely little woodland, surrounded by birds, with three white prominents.
Indeed, and you know, we'll see, maybe we'll get a few more as we go on this morning. But it's great that we've a really steady population now, and this week, you know, there's a new discovery in Glenbay, you know, hasn't been recorded out there before, and last year in Cremorne. So there is a population that's starting to move outwards.
Yeah, and I suppose as more people become interested, and perhaps as more people become more aware of them, maybe we'll find that they are a little bit wider spread in County Kerry than first thought.
Maybe, or even more in Ireland.
Maybe more in Ireland. Yeah, I often wondered, like, because the habitat here is, I've never been in a birch woodland like this, and I just wonder if there are other little pockets of birch woodland like this that might just have white prominent.
It's possible, yeah. They talk about old birch, but you know, we've found white prominent on younger birch, but maybe there's a connection in distance or in the location for where that new birch woodland has grown up as well. And you know, the white prominent has just decided, you know, it doesn't have to be old birch, and it doesn't have to be large numbers of birch trees either. You know, single birch trees have produced moths as well.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow. Well, look, it's been a dream of mine since I got interested in moths only a few years ago. I'm a total beginner in this whole journey, and I never thought I'd be in County Kerry looking at a species that the first book I read said was extinct.
And mythical.
Yes,
it was mythical. And made up. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Indeed.
Thank you again very much indeed.
You're more than welcome.
Glen Carr is such an important area for the white prominent, and it's wonderful to see the local community embracing it and wanting to protect its unique habitat.
Well, I think it's intriguing really that, you know, that we have such moths in our area here in Glen Carr.
Breda Breen is the owner of the Blackstones House B&B near Blackstones Bridge. Thanks to the presence of the white prominent, she has hosted many new visitors from near and far. But has Breda ever seen a white prominent?
I have indeed, yeah.
And where was that? Was it just
which
there?
Was somebody who stayed here and he showed me the mat, and I have a photograph.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Little did you ever think when you started this B&B that there would be people coming here specifically to see moths, because angling, I think, is your main...
Angling and walking.
And walking.
Mountain climbing.
Of course, you have the, you know, Carn Tool right behind you, and you have this beautiful river. What's the river called?
The Carra.
The Carra River.
And in Lickeen Wood.
And Lickeen Wood. You have just such a wonderful, wonderful place here. And Breed, just wonderful to see a new form of ecotourism and people like yourself encouraging that by protecting the woodlands here and making sure everything is good and clean and healthy.
Yes.
So thank you very much for your hospitality.
Yeah. And thank
really,
you, Eric.
I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah. Okay, Eric.
And with that, my quest is at an end. It has been an extraordinary adventure. It was a genuine privilege to meet so many wonderful people, all so willing to share their knowledge. True conservationists whose love for this unique moth helps to maintain its population and enrich our biodiversity. I would like to extend a heartfelt thank you to everyone who assisted me on my journey of discovery into the mysterious world of the white prominent. This gorgeous moth is no longer just an insect to me. It has become both a symbol of an entire ecosystem and a timely reminder that, given the chance, nature can bounce back. For 7 decades, the white prominent was believed lost forever to us here in Ireland. Yet, somehow, it survived, unseen and unknown, waiting for its moment to come into the light once more.
That edition of Mooney Goes Wild was presented by Eric Dempsey and produced by Derek Mooney. And if you're curious about the natural world and would like to join the Mooney Goes Wild team on air to put a question to the panel, the team are planning a listener special in the coming weeks. So send your questions to mooney@rte.ie.
Email mooney@rte.ie.